News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Two of your all-time favorites right here in studio. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5-807.
Yes, it is. Text line still open for you, 251-343-0106, and we will really open it up after 8:30 once we start talking about some other issues here. But first, since it is a Tuesday, it's time to talk with Quinn Hillier. You can read his work at his website, quinnhillier.com, but he also writes for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, listenership.
Yeah, and we have plenty to talk about, including a state race that we have that'll be coming up before long. First, I wanted to ask you this, actually. You've spent time in D.C. Have you ever gone to one of those, the White House Correspondents' Dinners, or
have you? No, I have not gone to one of those fancy functions. I've gone to a number of interesting functions up there that were pretty big, but not the big ones like that. Not the ones where it's really ritzy and you only have the self-proclaimed total elite.
You got to pay a lot of money for a table. I mean, you got to be sponsored pretty much as an individual.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you can pull it off.
Well, and you know, so I know that the security is supposedly top notch at events like the State of the Union, or you know, when the president is actually sworn in. But some of these other events, did you find over time that security was a little more lax, or do you think that's something that has happened over the years?
Well, look, I don't know exactly what the Secret Service has, how many layers of security. I will say this, there are a number of times when what is visible as security seems both sort of a pain in the neck for ordinary people, but not enough to stop determined assassins. And, I don't know. It literally can be both at the same time. But again, you don't know if they've got extra layers or what they've done, what they've done with dogs beforehand to sniff things out. I just don't know. But I will say, sometimes yes, it has seemed to be lax. Even in the 80s, after Reagan was shot, and then I went to some dinners where Reagan was the speaker, and I was thinking, my goodness, if I'd gotten here 24 hours ahead of time, I could have done something, you know, if I had pre-planned. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I'll second a recommendation, by the way. Todd Stacey was on with Sean Sullivan yesterday and said the show Death by Lightning. It's like a mini-series on Netflix.
Terrific show, yeah.
Oh, it's
I'm
great.
I'm going to call him on it, yeah.
Oh, you did? Yeah, I finally watched that last month.
So where do you find it?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
About the assassination of James Garfield. And,
you were telling me about that.
Good
stuff
there. But
by the way, where Reagan was shot, same hotel.
Yeah.
Outside the same
hotel. How
about
that? Well, let's talk about some state issues as well. I know you have some top of mind there, Quinn.
Yes, indeed. Well, first of all, I have to say the most interesting headlines on 1819 News today, all I've read is the headlines. I didn't get chance to read the story, so I can't talk about it much other than to say the headlines say that a whole bunch of state money is being funneled to left-wing activist groups. I don't think state money should be funneled to any activist group. Those stories bear reading, and if they're right, then there needs to be corrective action. So,
yeah.
That's all I'll say about that right now, is urge people to go read those stories.
Yeah, that sounds like an Onion headline. In the state of Alabama, you've got that kind of thing happening?
It's incredible. Craig Monger with 1819 wrote this, and we'll go into more detail on this story in the second half of the hour. But basically, state money going to progressive nonprofits, but it seems in these nonprofits, which are receiving somewhere around $20 million in total, only one person is
overseeing,
running them. Yeah, and that is this one woman who also runs the CEO of the Magic City Acceptance Academy and Magic City Wellness Center, Karen Musgrove. And state, in particular, this is the Birmingham AIDS Outreach organization or nonprofit that Monger's writing about here, that had revenue of nearly $15 million for fiscal year 2024. And it's not apparent where all of that is being spent.
Wow.
So really interesting. I didn't realize that state money
would go.
Was going in that kind of bulk to nonprofits.
it should not be doing so, and that's another reason to have smaller government, have government do less in general. But mm-hmm. that said, there was something else in 1819 News that caught my eye yesterday that made me start to fume.
Hmm.
You had Tommy Tuberville, U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, ranting about his likely gubernatorial opponent, Democrat Doug Jones, also former U.S. Senator. And at first I was like, okay, Tuberville's actually saying something that needs to be said, because Doug Jones had called him out somehow or other, I'm not sure exactly how, on Social Security, because Tuberville had said Social Security is a scam. And at first I say, okay, you know, Tuberville's right. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. That's the word that Tuberville used. And I said, okay, this is going to be good. And then I started reading, and the more I read, the more angry I got at Tuberville, because everything he said after rightly calling it a Ponzi scheme, everything he said was pure sheer demagoguery. He kept saying, Doug Jones is part of the problem. He was in office, did nothing to fix Social Security. He just fed lie upon lie upon lie to the people. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe, but where's your solution, Senator Tuberville? What is your point here? Mm-hmm. What do you want to do about Social Security? And all he did is he blasted other politicians for not having fixed it, but he's been in office the last 5 years. What has he done to fix a system that is about to go bankrupt in the next 5 years, when some of us have been warning for 30 years that it needs a fix, and the fixes then would have been much easier?
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't offer anything. He just keeps spewing this demagoguery about Doug Jones, career politicians. Tuberville has now been in office almost as long as Doug Jones will. And when I finally get to it, the one thing that Tuberville claims credit for is taking away some taxes on your Social Security benefits. Well, guess what? That makes the system insolvent faster.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps talking about how he cares about his grandchildren, and they're not going to have this system because the system is going bankrupt. Well, the only single thing that he has done is vote for something that's going to make it go bankrupt faster. Where are the solutions? Don't be a demagogue unless you offer solutions. And I could go, I've written, you know, thousands and thousands of words on what the solutions would be. I didn't see a single word from Senator Tuberville other than that Doug Jones is a career politician and is responsible for this.
But it's interesting, this is what the two are arguing over, because they want to be governor of the state of Alabama.
Exactly.
And the governor wouldn't actually have much say in federal, the Social Security policy federally. I know that Tuberville has been wanting to do something about this, but the Republicans have held the House and the Senate and the White House now for going on 2 years, and we haven't seen much movement at all there. Didn't see any fixes when the Democrats held office. Just like the national debt, it seems that this problem is just going to, well, stay with us until we finally see a forced end to it, or I don't know exactly what comes of Social Security.
We're going to hit about the year 2033, which is only 7 years from now, unless something changes. Suddenly, Social Security is only going to be able to pay about 73% of its promised benefits overnight, unless we do something.
Well, I know he didn't have a solution. I read the article myself, but again, you use the word that he uses prominently in that article too, and that's promise. It was a promise. It sounds like you think it's about to be without any way around it, a broken promise at some point.
Well, unless lawmakers finally do something. And literally, they could have changed the formula a tiny little bit 15 years ago, and the problem would be substantially less. The sort of drop dead date wouldn't be 2033. It would be about 2044, meaning you buy a whole lot of time for even bigger reforms that actually save it. But let me say this. Everybody that says, oh, you know, this is a broken premise, here's the dirty little secret. For the lower about two-thirds or three-fourths of income earners, they, on average, will take in, even after accounting for inflation, significantly more in Social Security benefits than they paid in Social Security taxes. All they have to do is live until they're about 75 years old, and they will start taking in more than they paid in.
Interesting.
So as bad as the system is right now, and is, you know, and it could have been a lot better if they listened to W. Bush in 2005 and 2006 and allowed investment in the stock market,
yes,
everybody would be about 130% better in those benefits than they are now. I'm pulling that number up. I read it about 3 weeks ago, yeah. So it might have been 110, might have been 150. It was something astronomically better. But mm-hmm. nobody has done anything because both sides, except for W., who tried and had his own party abandon him, he's the only one that tried. Everybody else demagogues the issue, blames the other side, but does zero, absolutely zero, to make it better. And in Tuberville's case, in the Trump administration's case, in the Republican Congress's case, they made it worse.
Yeah.
They literally made it worse last year.
Going into this last presidential election, I was listening to a ton of podcasts with potential members of the administration and then who became members of the cabinet in the administration. And I remember Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent talking about potentially putting together a public investment fund of sorts, kind of like mm-hmm. what we see with Saudi Arabia, and invest a lot of that money into the stock market and then eventually use those gains to help fund Social Security. But if you look at the way that it's set up now, Quinn, I mean, it's a great problem to have that people are living so much longer than they used to, but that still works against Social Security in this yep. case. You're not going to have anyone run for president or federal office that says they will cut benefits or raise taxes. So until you get someone who's popular enough to do either one of those, we're going to have an issue. Or, yeah. like you said, find a way to get the gains out of the stock market and use that to Social Security's
yeah.
benefit.
Look, but Bill Clinton came up with the public investment fund idea in the late 90s, and there are problems with it. I think Bush's approach with individually controlled accounts was better. But we have to do something, and, you know, everybody's been looking. Granted, the date used to be 2028, and because the economy's been better over time than mm-hmm. we expected, the drop-dead date is now 2033. But still, you know, that means it's only 7 years away, and then the entire fund becomes insolvent, meaning it literally cannot make good due on its current promises to current recipients 7 years from now.
And so, I mean, the hope that Doge gave a lot of Americans as it came in and slashed and found all the fraud in so many programs, that's kind of sizzled out in a way. It might have
sizzled out a long time ago.
Yeah, and I guess it would have to do with the outcry from those who benefited or worked a lot of those jobs. But those seem to be taking at least positive steps when it comes to maybe not yet Social Security, but certainly the national debt overall, Quinn. I mean,
the problem with Doge was that it did it in unconstitutional fashion. Look, I've said all along, you need to change the civil service laws, and you need to have a debt commission, and you need to have an entitlements commission. And if you do those things, change the Administrative Procedures Act. If you mm-hmm. do those four things, then you have a chance of getting the debt at least manageable again, and Social Security and Medicare solvent for 10, 20, 30 years longer. You've got to do those four things.
Well, what that has to do with becoming governor of Alabama, I'm not sure, but it is a conversation that needs to be had nationally. We'll hit the break, and when we come back, talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East, the blockade of the blockade, and the filibuster. Republican senators calling for the Republicans to nuke the filibuster to get this DHS funding bill through. We'll talk about that and more on the way right here on Mobile Mornings.
news, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
And Quinn Hillier, 826. I was mentioning to Dalton earlier this morning, Quinn, the story in Iran, you know, the latest there. It just seems that there's kind of a weight game going on both sides with America waiting for the Iranian economy to completely collapse, and then Iran's waiting. They're waiting on the pressure to mount in the midterms and all that kind of thing here in the United States to pressure Trump to make a move. Is that pretty much how you see it?
Yeah, and it is really annoying. Look, listeners will know that I have supported, and I'm not a huge Trump fan, but I have supported. I have supported Trump's a decision to go into Iran. The problem is, as I said the very first time after he did it, right on the show, I said, as long as he actually has a strategy in mind. Well, it is clear that he doesn't have a strategy in mind because he keeps ping-ponging back and forth between extremes. He's going to destroy their entire civilization, and then the next day he's got a two-week ceasefire, and then he's going to rain hell down on them, and then he's extending the ceasefire. And he doesn't even seem to have an idea what he's doing. Meanwhile, what has our military been doing all this time? Why can't we stop this pitiful little navy from shutting down the Strait of Hormuz? Somehow it seems to me that should be the easiest thing of all, is to be able to blast these little fast boats out of the water. I don't understand why we can't do that. I don't understand the lack of consistency here, and that's what's really bothersome.
Well, yeah, and I think you have to look at his words in one context and then his actions in another. And as far as the Iranians and their hold on the Strait, I mean, they've perfected whatever that art is. They have these boats that they keep in tunnels. I don't know where they are.
Remember the mines.
The mines are out there. To me, it seems, Quinn, like Trump is like poking them and seeing where it hurts, and he's figured that this blockade is hurting them more than anything, and you have the benefit of not, at the moment, having to rain down bombs on Iran. If this actually works, it seems like a better alternative.
But it's not working. I mean, you've got huge swaths of the world having energy shortages. You have the prices of energy going up, up, up. You have the Strait of Hormuz is still closed. Where was the planning for this in advance? We know that the Strait of Hormuz is a choke point. How could we go into Iran like we did now, 7 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, and not have a plan for the Strait of Hormuz? Where's the planning other than the shock and awe of the first 3 days? I haven't seen it.
You can say there's no planning, and maybe there's a lack of a central planning here. But the other thing, maybe you have to think that Rubio and they talked all this out. I mean, there's no way they just ran in there like they were trying to take over a kid's playground. I mean, maybe the strategy is yet to be seen.
I challenge anybody to be able to show a strategy. By all indicators, Trump was surprised that Iran was able to seize the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, listen, we appreciate your time, Quinn. Thanks for chatting with us.
Appreciate it. Thanks. All right.
Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, NOLA, The Advocate, coming back. We get to your text, 251-343-0106. Plus, I'm going to lay out that story Craig Monger wrote for 1819 News.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Yeah, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835, Mobile Mornings. Little reaction to Quinn on the text line, 251-343-0106. Thank you for listening, and thank you for texting, and you can call if you like, 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and the Social Security question, obviously that's a hot-button issue. I'm still trying to figure out why Tuberville should, by all intents and purposes, waltz into the governor's office come November. But we've seen crazy things happen before, and it does seem that Doug Jones, who has sparred with Tuberville before in that Senate race, that Doug Jones will be leading the Democrats on their ticket come November. But the two they're debating, I guess that's good news, but they're debating what to do with Social Security, which is, you know, the federal program. I'm not sure what the governor of Alabama would have to do with that. Obviously, state finances, that's a big thing they can argue about. And it sounds to me like Tuberville, if he and when he gets into office, will be looking seriously at state fraud, at programs that aren't necessary, that are a drain on the funds of the state. And I hope that does come to fruition if he does indeed get into office.
Yeah, but so there's another story in 1819 News. You have the Tuberville story from yesterday. I read it this morning, but that was actually published yesterday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So today, a different one, and it's almost, it doesn't sound like it would be a state of Alabama story.
No, and I do want to get to that. Craig Monger, and that published yesterday as well, a fantastic investigation on his part that will continue, I assume. But as far as texts from the Quinn segment on Social Security, Jay says they need to hire Pelosi to manage the Social Security funds in the stock market, and maybe we could have a 600% increase. Yeah. Why don't they do any? I mean, I know the funds could be invested in a much better fashion, the Social Security funds. But if you're going to insider trade Congress, insider trade with the Social Security funds.
It'll help us all out.
Exactly.
Give us a hand.
Jason with some dark humor here. Maybe it's not as dark for some people. He says, by 2033, we'll all be at home getting universal basic income checks, so Social Security would be a non-factor. He says, kidding, of course.
Well,
that's something that'll have to be reckoned with as well, as people are put out of work because of AI.
I wish I had the numbers in front of me, the jobs that somehow, I won't say completely silently, but jobs that have been cut in big firms, big tech, over the past couple of weeks are extraordinary numbers. We're talking about 16,000 here and 15 and 30,000 here. I understand a lot of these companies are worldwide, so that's not, but it's still not a drop in the bucket.
No, and it's mostly white collar tech jobs that are getting the axe first.
Yep.
So a lot of the tech guys who I'm sure have been welcoming in this tech revolution now seeing the unemployment line because of it.
You're getting swallowed up by AI.
Yeah. Tim says the problem with Social Security is you get too many people that are drawing benefits that hadn't paid any money. And the people that are actually paying in the money are the ones that are going to be punished for the bad choices. I've paid in way more than I will ever get back. And every time we bring up Social Security and the fix for Social Security, it draws a heck of a reaction because I do fully understand how many of you, since you began working, have seen that withdrawal coming out of your paycheck every single time.
Well, look,
but finally get to the age where you're supposed to draw off of it. The right way, you did everything the right way, and they're telling you that, hey, in 7 years, we'll be insolvent. That has to be incredibly frustrating. But so many of those people also lash out when someone's trying to fix the problem or come up with a solution. Yeah. They say, hey, that's not fair. I've been paying in. You can't just change everything on a dime.
Well, you know, it depends. Pay now, you're going to have the pain now, you're going to have the pain later. It looks like that's what a lot of this is going to come down to. I've had conversations about Social Security with my my investment team. It's one guy named Bill, but anyway,
we love you, Bill.
it's like I've had this conversation for a while, and some of the top, you know, he is employed by a huge firm that should know what the end game is going to be here, and they don't know. They really don't know, except to say that for the most part, investors will tell you there's no way they're just going to pull the rug out. But you know, I certainly don't know, and it's coming closer to that time for me. Think about this: if you are lucky enough to get to the age of Social Security, and somehow they have done a magic act, and it's good to go for 65-year-old Dalton.
You would have been putting
money into that. Think about all those decades, and I think about the times I had menial little jobs, but there was money coming out of my paycheck for Social Security from the time I was, I guess, like 16.
And it became a Ponzi scheme. You have these politicians who want to remain in power, and you end up getting people receiving Social Security that didn't put in their hard-earned cash the way that so many did over the years, and no one willing to put their own office on the line to come up with a fix for it. It's incredibly maddening, just like the overall debt problem with the country. And as far as Iran, Gardner says, doesn't it make sense to be able to change plans to get to the objective of not letting Iran have nuclear weapons and control of Hormuz? I think, and I don't want to speak for Quinn, I don't want to diagnose Quinn either, but it's, I think, a reach to say that the Pentagon and the president didn't go into this with a plan. But also, when you go to war, you have to be able to shift your plans.
Sure.
If that's what the war calls for. I mean, how many times have we as a country gotten in trouble over the years for not shifting plans? You go in with certain objectives, things go wrong, but you decide to stick the course. That doesn't seem like the smart way to navigate things. All those bombings, the thousands and thousands of bombs that dropped on Iran over those first several weeks of the war did an incredible amount of damage to their military infrastructure.
Yeah, it did.
And their ability.
And their hierarchy, too.
Yeah, and their ability to launch those missiles.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if they knew how many more missiles they would have in reserve, how many more missile launchers they had buried under the ground that they'd be able to pull out and continue to rain fire from above. But that's another thing where you see what's going on, you kind of have to change your plans. Once Trump decided to do this blockade, while many, even Americans, are saying that the U.S. is losing this war because Iran has been able to drag it out as long as they have, I think what Trump found was that this blockade is really doing some serious damage, but it takes patience.
Right.
And that's something that Americans have none of.
Well, and so again, you it's going to take if patience is the answer here, Republicans are going to pay the price because of the midterm elections and because there's going to be fractions, well, there already are, fractures within the Republican and within MAGA, and that's because this thing is such a big worldwide deal. And Trump, in his business dealings, Dalton, it seems he's got this way that he goes about it. It can be chaotic. In the end, he's looking to win. So he's saying, yeah, we blitz on first down sometime. We do this, and it's unconventional. But that's how I know through my lifetime in business, I've won. I've won this way. It's just a little tough, especially with you and I. I'll just speak for myself. I've got no choice but to follow the news closely. He's dragging us. It doesn't seem to affect him. But you have the world watching. And so some of this chaotic back and forth is taking us all for this ride that's leaving us a little queasy.
I guess just after all this time covering Trump, watching what he does, the words that he says, the posts that he puts on Truth Social, especially when it's meant to be read by the other side, in this case, Iran and the IRGC, I look at Trump's words as like a press conference for a big UFC fight or a boxing match where, I mean, he's up there on the stage saying he's going to smash that other guy's head through the canvas. I was like, okay, well, I mean, sure. But there is that chance that during the actual fight, he smashes that guy's head through the canvas. But you know that it's mostly bluster, and he's trying to draw a reaction of some sort out of the other person.
Bluster.
That's the way I look at Trump when he's in these negotiations.
But Dana White is over the
UFC.
UFC. Trump's over the world.
Yeah.
So it's a little more, his madness is a little tough to deal with from time to time, just because, look, when that war started, I felt like the reason that it did start was the intelligence that the CIA and Israel had on Iran, and they felt confident this was the time to go do it. And there were, it was such a devastating series of victories to start it all out. I never thought that Trump was doing it for the wrong reasons. I thought quite the opposite. He thought we can take care of this headache once and for all. Is it gone completely along what I would hope the plan would have been? Not necessarily, but I don't know exactly where he expected to be right now. He talked about a 6-week war. We're now in 7 week or 8 week. We're going to have to stretch it out a little bit more. It's all, I think it's a matter of time and how much time will Trump allow himself to have.
Yeah. And I mean, are we going to adjust for ceasefire too? If the war came to an end today, you could say it was a 6-week war because the ceasefire has been dragging on for a couple weeks now. But
sure.
I think there's a good chance we also see strikes resume too.
Well,
so.
Just to reiterate, I thought when Trump went to war, I thought good. And now that we're in it, I'm thinking to myself that I don't know that they've got all the answers, but I think they have enough of the answers to just let Iran collapse on itself. Mm-hmm. And maybe we didn't get the citizens to revolt quite the way we hoped it would. Yeah. But they have no arms.
And Iran is still hanging protesters or the enemy within for them by the day. I do think there's a chance that Israel, you know, maybe led us to think that it was more of an open shut war than it actually ended up being.
Could be.
You would think that the Pentagon would vet that thoroughly enough, but there were reports coming out from media that the Trump administration was split on that Israeli information that was coming in and whether or not to take it seriously.
So. As in Vance, no, and mm-hmm. maybe some others, no. And
Hegseth was on board, ready to roll.
Yeah.
But some others said, we need to take a closer look at this.
Would Rubio be one of those? I can't recall.
I think Rubio may have been on the side of, let's go ahead and get this done.
Okay.
But I need to check back on those reports.
Yeah.
Also, on the text line, I'll get to this Craig Monger story here in a minute. For Social Security, Tim says, I would have been a whole lot better to take my money and put it in a mutual fund my whole career. Would have been rich. Texter here says business match 2 for the Social Security and said too many carved out programs reaching into the Social Security pot. Texter here says forget Social Security, start with Congress and all their lifetime benefits for supposedly a part-time job, healthcare, etc. Rock and Roll Doctor says what do you want Trump to do, Dan? Apologize for his method of productivity? Just get it done. I don't care how he does it or people's feelings about it. Whether they're Americans or foreigners.
Yeah, well, not everybody's you. Not everybody is you.
Mm.
Who's texting in?
A rock and roll doctor.
Yeah, that's fine. That's your opinion. I'm saying that for me, who was saying, yeah, let's do this. Let's take them out once and for all. For me, the process has been a little queasy.
A little bumpy.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, well, everything is with Trump, a little bumpy of a process. Let's get to this Craig Monger story, and then hopefully we'll hold on a second there, Dan. I think, yeah, Leanna's getting that call in the other room. So Craig Monger with 1819 News put out this story. Headline, and Quinn pointed it out, state doling out millions in funding to progressive nonprofits in Birmingham. And he writes, basically, you know, you had the Republicans federally, Republicans in the state. They're always talking about slashing funding for progressive institutions, right? That was a big part of Trump's win for this second term. But he says, despite that, millions of state and federal dollars continue to pour into an expanding network of nonprofit organizations. And we have great nonprofits out there, right? He writes, including K through 12 schools, medical centers.
Right. Nonprofits, that's not a bad word necessarily.
No. But, you know, what's that nonprofit's mission? And then beyond that, despite their stated mission, what are they actually doing with those funds they're receiving from the state, those taxpayer monies?
More than fair question.
He mentions DOGE here, which came up earlier in conversation, and the initiative of DOGE trying to cut out a lot of that wasteful spending and funding to woke initiatives. He says, in the case of the Alabama-based Birmingham AIDS Outreach, BAO is the acronym, Health and Human Services grants have continued to flow in for years from the federal government, despite anticipated cuts under Trump. According to its IRS filings, BAO is a registered 501c3 nonprofit, had a reported revenue of $14.8 million for fiscal year 2024.
Hmm.
Now, the organization lists its expenses at $13.7 million, pretty massive chunk of that revenue. That includes the $136,000 salary of the only paid BAO employee listed on IRS forms, Karen Musgrove. Now, Musgrove is also an adjunct professor at UAB and is the CEO of the Magic City Acceptance Academy and the Magic City Wellness Center. MCAA is an LGBTQ-affirming charter school in Birmingham. MCWC is a LGBTQ medical wellness center. Now, those two organizations received millions for the MCAA, but much less than the Birmingham AIDS Outreach. $3.38 million in state funding went to the Acceptance Academy last year. $337,000 in federal funding went to it. And that's been the center of several controversies that have been reported on in 1819 News. So he writes here, there are no public records of the Wellness Center's funding. It's also registered as a 501c3 and appears to be an affiliate of the other two organizations. He says, BAO, this is the part that caught me in his article. BAO appears to offer services to HIV and AIDS patients, which you would expect with that name, right? Birmingham AIDS Outreach. You'd think that all the funding would go to that. But Craig writes, it does not list services on its website. It also boasts of feeding pets and administering pet vaccines in its mobile van. On its social media, the connections show through in events and partnerships between all three of those nonprofits. BAO is progressive, he says. They also advertise regular bingo nights for the Birmingham AIDS Outreach Program with cash prizes. In its most recent IRS form for fiscal year 2024, they reported revenue of $67,000 from its gaming operations, from bingo nights. For fiscal year 2024, most of that money came from grants and contributions. They did receive $3.7 million per year from 2023 to 2025 through Health and Human Services fundings. They're also really tight, have a friendly relationship with Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin. So he points out here, there's still a lot of taxpayer money going to these organizations.
Yeah.
You go to the website, they don't even have their services listed. And it appears from his reporting, what they're offering are pet feeding, pet vaccines, and bingo nights. I mean, what exactly is Birmingham AIDS Outreach doing?
$14.5 million a year?
In total. Now, I think that includes contributions and grants. That's how much they had in revenue for fiscal year 2024. They received over $3 million, though, in taxpayer money from the federal government. And the state continues to put money into some of these services as well.
Does this sound a little bit like a backroom deal to give Republicans, of course, the supermajority? They're saying, give the Democrats this, and they'll help us with this.
Yeah, throw them a bone from time to time.
Throw them a bone from time to time. This will never get out, but it got out.
It did. And so I'm sure Craig will continue to report on that and find out exactly what Birmingham AIDS Outreach is doing for the good of the community as far as AIDS outreach. And then also why this one woman is the CEO of these three different organizations. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think the question lodged in all our minds right now is, what in the world does Dalton have against bingo? It's 8:53 with Dan and Dalton.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
You ever been to any outboard drag racing on a lake?
I have not.
Lake Callaway, I think the name of it in Georgia. Yeah, it's wild.
I've seen them flip. I've watched a lot of it on TV.
But. Yeah, it's something live. 8:57, Dan and Dalton.
No, something else that's amazing live is the Jeff Poor Show, and it's on the way here in just a few minutes. He'll have in hour number one, candidate for Lieutenant Governor Stuart Tankersley. In hour number two, a local race here. Paul Prine, candidate for Mobile County Sheriff, will join Jeff Poor. And in hour number three, Will Hampson with P2 Public Affairs, set to join the Jeff Poor Show. David on the text line, on what planet does it make any sense to broadcast these strategic war plans to the public or the media? The efforts would be completely ineffective. Might as well arm your enemy, too, if you do that. And the president has said just as much about that over the years.
Trump arms his enemies within. He arms the people that want to criticize him in the nation by certain behavior.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's pretty cool. And they're all too ready to use whatever ammo they think they have.
I agree.
Texter here, how much stretching do you two have to do in the morning before you twist yourselves into these pretzels to not just admit that Trump has been a disaster? Iran, tariffs, Epstein? Well, Texter, I'd like you to take a moment, close your eyes, and think about a world in which Kamala Harris won the presidency in 2024. What are things looking like now if Kamala Harris is the president?
Well, we saw Biden and his auto pen, and that wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. And a couple more texts about Social Security. We've got to hit the road. 8:58, Mobile Mornings will be back tomorrow morning at 6. Jeff Poor Show coming up next, and don't miss Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan at noon.